We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
Welcome back to the Behind the Glass podcast. It's your boy Rob Bell here. We got three new artists for September. I'm flying solo today. Rich and Q left me on my own. And Chris, I'm starting to think that this was the plan all along.
this is a full handoff. It's a full handoff, Rob. Yeah. I mean, they wanted to change the vibes a little bit.
Yeah.
Bring a little bit of lo-fi vibes to the table.
You already know I'm here to bring that for sure. We got three great artists. I'm really excited about this group. We got Crit Oopra. We got Deja Cologne, a.k.a. Digital Dash. We got Swap Nil, also known as Swap. And we've had some, we've mixed and matched a lot recently with photographers, more fine artists. And I'm excited because I feel like we're getting back to the essence on this one with some great photography.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the joys about, you know, one, doing the podcast here is we've seen, you get to see different progression, right? You get to see, you know, the different expressions and how sometimes they contrast, how much sometimes they're harmonious. And you don't always know how it's all going to turn out until you're in the gallery. But I got to say, like, going back to sometimes just photographers that haven't been on a wall before, that is, it's what I remember when we did the first ones. Right. And that's what I think back to when I think back to the first few. That's what it was all the time. And I love that it's both.
Yeah.
If it was just one after 2.5 years, you want the opportunity to stretch and try different things.
For sure.
But it is great to get back to just straight photography sometimes too.
Absolutely. And it's that time of the year. It's getting crisp and cool outside. And it's, I saw some of the work that got put up, a little preview, and people are really excited already about what's on the wall this time. So I think it's going to be a great show. Please come out and support Friday, 6 to 8, Mercantile on Main.
Yes, Friday, September 5th, 6 to 8. You know, swing by. It's a great way to start your first Friday, you know, swinging at 6. Go check out a few other things.
Yeah.
It's a great home base starting at the Merc, starting at the Sibley building.
Absolutely.
Right downtown. You got a lot of opportunity to go see a lot of different things.
Absolutely. So it's going to be a great show. So about to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to each artist about their journey and their work. And I'm excited for this conversation for sure.
All right. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Behind the Glass podcast. We're going to get into it with some of our artists. So we're going to start off with Crit Oopra.
Hello.
How you doing, man?
Doing great.
Welcome to the podcast. Wasn't familiar with your work before, you know, we started to curate this show, but I'm a fan now. I can say that for sure. talk to us a little bit about who you are, man, your background, how you got into photography. Introduce yourself to the audience.
Yes, sir. So the history of myself is quite a lengthy one to kind of give it as summarized as much as possible.
Okay.
I'm actually from Thailand.
Okay.
So I came out to the U.S. when I was 15 years old as an exchange student, and I've always felt very disconnected with my own culture growing up. Everything I was watching was Western, right? Movie, music, Linkin Park was my jam.
Okay.
And so nothing in the culture that was produced, film, movie, was really hitting it at all. And so as I continued to grow up, same thing, everything I was listening to was Western music. My dad was very into like old school rock and roll too. So growing up was like blasting, Twisted Sisters in the cars and stuff like that. Okay. So it's a very weird vibe growing up in Thailand, feeling like I was out in the US, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing. I don't know why.
Right. And so I'm like, I don't get it, but like, that's how it was. And so we came. So then when I was throughout my life, so then felt very disconnected with my own culture. But being a brown individual in the country itself, I kind of dealt with somewhat racial issue growing up. And Southeast Asia is one of those cultures where it's like a little bit more in the subtle aspect, right? Okay. There's a very much so whitewash culture that goes on within that culture in the Southeast Asia. So it's something that I dealt with growing up, and I think that was part of the reason where I felt really disconnected with my own culture as well, too. Yeah. So fast forward a little bit, 15 years old, this opportunity came through, sign on, got in. I landed in Memphis, Tennessee, was down there for a year with a family, right? Probably one of my favorite time. The family took me in was very, very amazing. We're still really connected till today. We still chat here and there. They're basically an extended family to mine at this point. Mm. But so I landed in Memphis, everything just clicked. And I was like, this is it. This is where I felt like I've always wanted to be. I mean, Memphis was a little odd, but food was also a big part to me growing up in Thailand. So barbecue quickly became another favorite food of mine.
And there's a lot of ties too, right? There's a lot of ties to, you know, Thai food when it comes to, you know, grilled meats and flavors and those potent, sweet and tangy, you know, and those contrasting flavors. I mean, Thai cuisine is so known for its, you know, sweet, savory, tangy, spicy. Like, you're talking a lot about those barbecue flavors.
Absolutely. Sure. So that's kind of like where I landed. Everything clicked, made sense. I wanted to continue my time in the country. So then I continued my education junior, senior year of high school in Tarrytown, New York, in this international boarding school. So that's when I got into photography. It was something that I've always been interested. My parents ran a computer store, so I always had access to it, but it was something that I never really decided to jump into it. So I decided one summer I was back home, decided to pick up a camera, played around with it, went back to school, ended up, I was in the soccer team, tore my ligament in my ankle, couldn't play anymore, but all my friends were in the team. So I'm like, what do I do now? So I decided to pick up the camera, start photographing around. Wow. And sport photography is probably one of the first thing that I started doing. And lucky enough, no one else in the school was doing that at the time. So my principal was like, yo, you want to be a school photographer? And I'm like, get to skip class, this and that. Sign me up.
That's a tough first photography gig too.
It is. Capturing motion is not easy.
It was, but I think it was just the fact that there was no bar of expectations at all. Yeah. They were just like, do you, you know? And so
Hi there, this is Magnus of The Mind of Magnus, a show dedicated to help expanding the mind that I have in this big skull of mine. I've grown up with the love of factoids and curious about the world, so I'm taking the time to interview all the most amazing people I've met. So join me for The Mind of Magnus. You can find it at magnusapollo.com. And if you have a guest, you want to be a guest, you want to learn more about what's going on in this world, please join me here on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Able to like get hyped up that much as somebody just picked up the camera. People are like, oh, I love it. Your friends are like, oh, send me your pictures, this and that. I mean, I'm going back and looking at some of those pictures and I was just like, wow, I thought I was good, you know? So it's like one of those moments, but it really sparked something. And so again, with my visa situation being an international student, my only option to continue my stay in the US after high school was then college. So without any hesitation at all, I wanted to find a way to stay in the US, go to college here. Photography was already like, okay, I wanted to go to school for that. Yeah. My parents, again, with their background, my dad's a PhD software, hardware engineer. And so he was like, you're doing computer. And I'm like, oh, okay, they're going to be the ones supporting the college and everything. So I didn't really have much say, but lucky enough, my mom's rule or her regulation was that she wanted to be in New York. Or Eastern, my I have an aunt that lives in Long Island. Okay. So it's like she wants it in New York or like East Coast.
Yeah.
Wanted to go somewhere that I can do engineering. So RIT was actually without any hesitation at all. I was like, okay, if I go here, I can apply for engineering, do a dual degree with photography. I dropped the engineering as soon as I could. So I ended up going to RIT, did engineering for a year, and then after that added on fine art photography my second year. Nice. And then at that moment, I dropped the engineering and picked up biomedical photography. So I actually graduated from RIT with a fine art and biomedical photography. So that's kind of like a little quick summary of how I really dove into photography. But I think with Chris, we were talking a little bit right before the show, especially in regard to local community and all that aspect.
Yeah.
And I think to me, my photography journey really started with that. I mean, when I was at RIT, I did lots of things. I started my own publication at the time, did Floated Magazine. So I was doing lots of content stuff around town, artists, music, food, culture, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. But that kind of was what pivoted me into actually being excited about what I was doing and actually being excited about photography. And my journey, I would say, especially in Rochester, started off on a First Friday, walking to Anderson Art Alley, went up to the first floor. I was in Richard Margolis' studio, and I was looking at one of his artworks, doing 4x5. You know, a couple of my friends came with me. We were just looking at it. They weren't even photographers. It was just like my roommates and my friends.
Yeah.
And so we were looking at the work, and Richard came up to me, and he was like, "Are you a photographer?" And I'm like, "Yes, I am." And he was like, "Let me see your work." So at the time, I was my freshman year. So I just wrapped up my fine art freshman final. So I pulled up my phone, showed him the project, and his response was, "Do you want to have a solo exhibition show?" And I'm just like, "Who is this guy? Like, who is this guy?" They're just like, out of nowhere, trying to do this. I'm like, yeah, I'm interested. So then he was like, "All right, give me your email, all the stuff, we'll get in contact." He emailed me later. He was like, "Yeah, come and check out the space." So I went out to his space. It was his studio right next to his actual space that he basically opens up as an open space for local artists. And he was
talking
like,
about Richard Glazer.
Margolis.
Richard Margolis.
Yeah, okay. So local, you know, more prominent on the photography side of things.
Okay, I didn't want people to think you were talking about our Richard.
Uh-huh. So yeah. Richard Margolis. So lots of the stuff, he does lots of 4x5, 8x10 old school photography. And I think in the bus station, if you go underneath the bus terminal, the train station, once you go underneath the train station to get onto the train, there's a bunch of pictures on the side of the wall, large prints itself. Those are all his artworks and stuff. I think it's some of them are also displayed in like the airport as well too.
Okay.
So a lot more of the old school, but so I went out to see this space, right? And he was like, "You want to have your show here?" And I'm like, "Yeah, what are you looking at? Like, what are you trying to get out of it?" And he was like, "Nothing. When I was around your age, somebody gave me an opportunity like this." Mm. And this is my studio workspace. So in the front of it, he basically converted, probably the same size as this room, he converted into like a gallery space.
Wow.
And then there's a doorway that you go through in his dark room, all his like stuff for his workshop, essentially.
Yeah.
So he said that he converted this space to become a gallery with the intention that he wanted to offer this back to the local community.
Wow.
So he saw my work. He said, "You want to have a show?" I said, "Yeah." So then he basically hooked me up. I had my first solo exhibition show as a freshman fine art photographer at RIT.
Wow.
And so I was just like, there's something about this city.
Yeah.
And so that really, really sparked something. I got lots of people that came out and supported me. But again, being a individual that really just got a footing into it, I was like, there's something about this city and there's something very supportive and magical about it.
Well, I mean, also like, when you're telling your story, right? You're talking about when you're at RIT. Like, well, yeah, I got there and I started doing like this zine magazine right away, and I was interviewing people and I was going out and checking out food and culture and everything. Like, wait. No, you just passed over the fact that like as soon as you got there, you were trying to engage, that you were making an effort to be part of something. And I think that's the other thing is if you're present when you're going out to a gallery. And you're actually engaging with the work and being there, and you're trying to be part of something. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it before on Behind the Glass and other shows. It's tough. It's tough to get engaged in a community, especially when, you know, it seems big and it seems like, oh, there's all these like visible photographers and everything else, and getting in is hard. And sometimes it can be overwhelming, but the first thing you do is you're contributing, right? You're trying to bring something, you're creating. Not just asking, you're contributing. And that's a huge thing.
And Rochester is the kind of city, I think, that once you do engage, you get rewarded for 100%. Putting yourself out there. Did you know any of the photography history here when you applied to RIT?
No. Me being from Thailand, right, my only logic was that, like, I like photography. I mean, here, to backtrack, right, when I applied to RIT as a photographer, my only thought process of being a photographer is I want to get a camera. I want to take a picture of people. And that was, like, the extent of it. And then, I mean, like, to really, really backtrack on the whole Rochester experience. So my first year and a half in Rochester, until that moment of me going out to that First Friday event, I hated Rochester. I was counting the days till I can leave Rochester to go home. But that first Friday event literally changed my perspective. And now I own a home. I have a wife and a daughter in Rochester. And I'm like, this is my home now. So it's like things really changed from that one interaction.
How many times do we hear that story?
Yeah, and people that left and came back, or people that came here and stayed. And that's kind of that's a lot of the journey we hear a lot about. What I'm kind of interested in, so we talked a lot about your journey, but let's talk about the actual photography. Like, what are the kind of things that define what you do that you do now? Like, how do you describe your photography now?
So I think it's been something that I've been having a hard time defining myself. And I think I've been wearing very many hats, and lots of people aren't aware of that. So right off of school, I mean, I dove right into advertising aspect, especially food was a big thing to me too. So I started working with food restaurant and started capturing more food and advertising related things. And it was something where RIT gave me that backbone to be able to switch hat, do whatever I need to. Yeah. But so during the day, 9 to 5, at this point, I run my own studio, do more commercial advertising work. And this past, I would say like 6 months, I've really felt like I've hit a wall with it. It wasn't something that was as fulfilling for me because I was doing work for other, not for myself. And as much as I'm still putting out work that I'm very proud of, it's not something that I felt as fulfilled. There's like a void that kind of went missing. And so when my daughter was born, I decided to get back into film photography again, just because I want to capture her picture to begin with. And we're trying to step a little bit back from digital too, using our phones, being around screens and such. So it was without a doubt a perfect way for me.
Yeah.
And so I started doing that and also wanting to find more time to connect myself back with photography. So that's when I started working more with stuff. But I would say my style as a photographer would be more so of a documentative style. I tend to go through my emotions and use photography as a way to process lots of things and to kind of speak a little bit about on the project that I have going on for this event itself. I think that the project itself ties right very much so personally. The project itself, the name of the project is Boys Do Cry. And part of the project itself kind of just talks about the mental health, again, in men, and just the idea that there's that wall that builds up. But I think for me, culturally itself too, it's something where like you don't see much, you don't talk much, you don't see people cry, you don't see guys cry. And I feel like you see that in lots and lots of culture. And I think this part of this project is me trying to explore a little bit more on that opposite side of that, right? A side where I can embrace how I feel and be how I am and be able to appreciate the happy side of myself, the sad side of myself, and also find a way to understand and express emotion through photography.
Yeah.
So I think I then document lots of things with the intention of it might be your, I mean, typical picture or something that you might see, but as I'm going through it, I'm seeing one thing. As I'm looking at another time, I'm seeing another thing. So lots of the pictures that you will see at this show itself are images that aren't new at all. It's part of an ongoing series. There's one picture, and it's going to be the center picture at all. I'm not going to tell you guys what it is. I mean, come out and check it out. But so that's the newest addition to the body itself. And same idea where I feel like it's one of those projects where I didn't have a set goal, didn't have a set idea of what it is. It just kind of started. I'm still kind of like deriving and working with it as I continue with it. Yeah. So as something new comes in, I shoot something, I'm like, okay, that is it. Now that's part of the project. I see it fits right in.
Yeah.
So this was probably the new addition to the project that I've had it added in since the past like 3-4 years. So I feel like this is a nice stepping stone to finally getting back into my fine art side a little bit more too.
Yeah. Well, I think this is also a great time to, you know, there's in many great ways, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, the negative ways that masculinity can portray itself. Mm. And I think justifiably so, right? That's an important discussion to have. But the goals are positive, right? Mm-hmm. The positive masculinity, it's being present and, you know, supporting your friends and being okay with yourself. And I think all of us, you know, have struggled with that at times. It can be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for doing the work. Appreciate you. I think we're going to move on to the next one because we have some more fun artists. So Crit, thanks for your time.
Of course.
Go ahead.
So next up, we got Deja, AJ, Deja Cologne, aka Digital Dash. Again, wasn't familiar with your work before this, but a fan now. So let us know who you are, what you do. How'd you get into photography?
I don't think my story is as cool as yours.
Wait, you didn't move here from Thailand?
No, I didn't, unfortunately. That probably would have been really beautiful. But, hey, my name is Deja Cologne. Artist-wise, I like to go by the name of Digital Dash. I just like to classify myself as an artist who enjoys playing within the different mediums. Mm. I really don't walk around saying, hey, I'm a photographer.
Yeah.
That's not what I really go walk around saying. Yeah. People just like give it to me. So I guess it's like nice to receive my flowers without asking.
Absolutely.
For them to be received. How did I get into photography?
Or how'd you get into art, period?
Okay, this is what happened, right? Originally, my whole thing was music, music, music. I wanted to be a part of music. So bad.
What was your inspiration? What was the thing that was you loved about music?
So, right. So I'm from Rochester, but I grew up in Florida. But then, like, when we moved back, my father owned a spot record shop, and he was a DJ. So, you know, after school, always going to the record shop, you know, hearing my dad continuously DJ, whether that be in the house practicing or, you know, just making the moves and do-do-do-do-do. I was like, wow, this is so beautiful. Like, everything about this, the way it makes me feel, like, it's just beautiful. I want to be a part of it. But then I was growing up, and my parents had moved us back to Florida. I was like, I'm not that social as I think I am. So I was like, how can I still be a part of the music scene without actually being like the forefront?
Yeah.
And that's when it was like, photo. And I was like, you know, I really paid it no mind at this point. I'm living in Florida. I'm only in ninth grade. So I'm like, okay. It's a thought, but the only thing I'm doing photo-wise is, like, yearbook at this point.
Okay.
So I'm involved with yearbook. Fast forward 2 years later, we end up moving back to Rochester. And I found myself, you know, recording my brothers on, like, the flip camera. They had, like, a jerking crew and, like, stuff like that. And I was like, oh, like, this is cool. Like, I like how this makes me feel, you know? So fast forward, and fast forward to college. So, fast forward, I was supposed to go to Marymount Manhattan. I was sabotaged, guys. That did not happen. My parents was like, no, you're too sweet. So, you should not be in New York City by yourself. And literally, my dad's from Brooklyn. He's from Brownsville. And he was like, yeah, no, I don't want you out there. You're the only girl. And
He saw New York in the 80s. You know, he knew a different New York.
Yeah, like, and, you know, he's from Brownsville. So he just looked at it like, no, my baby girl, my only baby girl, no way. She's not going out there. I was so upset. Guys, I probably had like 3 days to apply to a school. And I ended up at Finger Lakes Community College.
Shout out to FLCC.
FLCC. I ended up there, and I was like, okay, I guess I'll settle. You know, 2+2 program. All right, cool. I didn't know what I was going to go into. They didn't have photo. So I seen this thing called New Media Design, and I'm like, well, what is this? You know, I was like, I don't want to be a communications major. That's not something that, you know, I would be into. So I was like, okay, bite the bullet. I enrolled as a new media design student. And at first, it was so hard. All this HTML, the JavaScript. I was like, this is too much.
Science.
This is too much. Shout out my advisor.
Don't say science like that, Rob Bell.
No,
don't say
real.
Science like that.
I feel her, though.
The HTML, the JavaScript. I'm like, this is OD work. But I'm like, nah, this is too much. But my advisor, shout out to Paul Ingen, a.k.a. one of my favorite professors, he was like, you know, at least this way you'll be able to do multiple things within the field. Like, you don't have to categorize yourself just as one thing. You would be able to go, you know, out into the world, find a job in, you know, multiple places. Like, you just don't have to be stuck into one department.
You know what they say in marketing? Multidisciplinary.
Yeah.
Really?
Sounds good, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Sounds like you're serious business when you say multidisciplinary.
You know?
In Hollywood, they say multi-hyphenate.
Ooh, yeah, multi-hyphenate. Let's talk EGOT. Yeah, let's go.
You know?
Yeah.
So at first, I didn't even have a camera. So I'm waiting for my first refund check. I buy a camera. Because at first, I was just renting things out from the cage at school. And I was like, okay, well, let me see. I don't like this. Let me see. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get this camera. I end up getting the camera, and I end up taking a photography class. And my professor, David Dizzle, shout out to him. He told me something that crushed my heart. I was super offended at first. Not going to lie, guys. He was like, Deja, you're good at a lot of things, but you'll never be great at anything if you don't take your time to practice each one.
Mm.
And I was like,
that was great advice.
I was like, whoa. He's like, your work is like great, but it could be greater if you really just locked in, and you're not locking in, because y'all, I was being such a bad student. I just wasn't doing my homework. And it's like, he's like, I know it's easy for you, but you're choosing not to, like, push yourself. So you're never going to be as far as you want to be because you're not choosing to be. And I was like, damn.
Well, I mean, that's when you say that, right? That's that's real-ass adult advice.
For sure.
That's not kid advice.
Yeah.
That's adult advice. And it's really hard to hear when you're 18, 19. It's real adult advice. But those moments are the ones either you get angry or you take and you think about it.
Yeah, I was like, what? I'm about to turn it up a notch. Did just that, y'all. So from there, I started taking everybody's pictures on campus. I was like, hey, like, you know, I got an idea. Can I do this? Hey, I got an idea. Can I do this? At that point, I was just trying to build a portfolio and to get myself to being consistent.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't even about the money. I was just doing it out of the passion and out of the love, for real. So fast forward, my 2+2 is over. I end up at RIT in new media design. Once again, I feel like I definitely should have majored in like fashion advertisement or something like that, because I do mainly want to do photo. But it's okay. It's all love. It's all love.
Now, when you talk about fashion, is that a passion?
Oh, yes. It's definitely a passion. So during that time of those 2 years, obviously that was during COVID when I graduated with my associates. So when I came back, it was very much like, okay, I'm going to take a gap year and we really going to see what we're going to do. In the midst of that, I end up meeting now, which is my best friend, Zaria Cowlier, which is a known and respected model here in Rochester, New York. We had our first shoot together, and it was her first time getting comfortable, like, as far as, like, modeling, because she was into fashion. And, like, my first time, like, okay, this is, like, the type of photography that I want to do. Like, I want to be a part of fashion editorial. I want to be a part of, you know, making album covers, mixtape covers. Like, this is the lane. This is the stuff that I want to be around. So after that, we proceeded and we were able to build a team and we curated fashion shows. So for a long period of time, we were creating fashion shows between that gap year of me going to school. Team ended, fast forward, back in school.
It's a bit of a tough one when you've already started creating stuff.
Yeah.
To go back, but it's also the opportunity to find some value in it too. But it's a bit of a kick in the teeth when you're already creating something you're proud of.
And it is. And I think, well, this year, earlier in February, I experienced, you know, working my first New York Fashion Week, right, for Runway 7. And I was like, oh, like, yeah, this is definitely the lane I want to be in. But I also noticed that me just taking clients was taking away from my happiness of just wanting to curate. And I was like, okay, well, so I started to push myself to at least do a creative shoot once a week just for myself to kind of maintain that piece of this is the reason why you're doing it.
And what about that curation do you think drives you?
I love telling stories, storytelling in a cinematic manner. My whole goal is to have uncomfortable conversations throughout my art in hopes of making them more comfortable to speak about. Because I was nonverbal, you know what I'm saying, at one point in time. Talking was hard. Art has made me more social.
It feels like to me, whether it was the music or the fashion or the photography, is a need for you to express yourself.
Yeah.
So what would you say is the thing? I know you said storytelling, but is there a specific story that you want to tell?
Honestly, it's every story. It's, you know, my story, other people's stories who are nonverbal. Like, one of my side quests is I want to go to school for art psychiatric to be, like, an art therapist for children because all children don't, you know how to talk. You know, or conditioned into not talking.
Well, yeah, if that's something you're interested in exploring, we do have a friend of the podcast network who works in some of those situations. So if you want to check it out, we can introduce you to them.
Yes, see, I told you this is so emotional, guys.
But that's the thing is, like, when you have the opportunity to, one, you've learned about yourself, right? You're not talking just about, oh, I want to help kids that are it's that thing, right? You got a thing that you want to tell them about.
Yeah.
You want to tell them about your journey to doing more and doing better, but also give them the opportunity to tell their story in the way they can or the way they want to. And it's not going to be the same for everybody.
Do you feel like you're fulfilled now in doing what you want?
Yes, but I want more. And not like in a greedy manner more, but like, how do I say it? When you see so much for yourself, you don't want to stop till you get it.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm really just on that mission of I'm not stopping till I get it, you know? And I guess that brings me to the art that is displayed in the gallery. Two other pieces, I'm not going to say which one, but they go back to what you were talking about, the men's mental health. I have three brothers. I'm the only girl. So curating that series was about the Black men's mental health because I find it pretty interesting how, obviously, me and my brothers raised by the same parents, but we still all experienced life different. You know what I mean? And you learn how circumstances and experiences shape a person differently, even though if they're in the same environment, they still experience life differently. So those two pieces are more like, I used to tell people, oh, how are you doing? And they'd be like, I used to be like, I'm just floating. So those two pieces are really just about keeping your head above water, but more so about the Black man keeping his head above water. And just honestly figuring out and navigating through life and figuring out, okay, what to do, how to be a great man, how to show emotion, but I can't cry, like how to cope with those things. One of the pieces, I'm trying not to be too descriptive, but that one is based on honestly just basking in peace. That's where I'm currently at, trusting in God and basking in that peace, knowing that his hands is on me. And then the other two, I just really like the set design that I curated for them. I just really enjoyed the set design that I curated for them. And I was like, because I'm trying to get more into my set design bag. And I was like,
It's interesting because I got a 5-year-old son and a 3-year-old daughter. And you know, when she's crying and spazzing out, I'm like, oh, baby, it's okay. This, and that. And I have to catch myself from not letting my son have those emotions, right? Like, I have to constantly reset. And my first instinct is to tell him to stop crying, right? Because as a Black man in this world, I want him to be prepared, right? But at the same time, I don't want him to turn into somebody who bottles their emotions up to the point where they explode.
One day, right? Also, which leads to like him not knowing how to love correctly or in a like in a healthy manner to where, okay, he gets in a relationship and he's not sure how to communicate. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Or that could just be one any relationship. And like, I have two nephews. I don't have children. You know, like, I'm OD young, y'all. But, you know, my two nephews, when I look at them, it's like, my brother, he does gentle parenting. And I think it's nice, not in an aspect of, like, obviously you correct them, you know, there's discipline. But also having that understanding of this is a little person who is developing, who does have emotions, who is learning how to deal with them.
Yeah.
And it just goes back to, well, if you know how you grew up and what you grew up, why would you put, you know what I'm saying, another little person through that type of stuff? And that leads me back to the art psychiatric, because it's like, it'd be messed up.
Absolutely.
Whew.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? You brought it. I told you you would.
I told you you'd bring it. It was so scary. It's all so emotional.
Not at all. I can't wait to see your work. Thank you for sharing with us.
Cheers. Yep. Hey, let's move on.
And our final artist, last but definitely not least, he said they call him Swap in the streets. But that's... Swap Nil. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I feel like I have a... I have quite a lot to live up to right now, because these two stories were very inspirational, talking about like human psychology, their families. It was very inspiring listening to their stories and how they came here. And I kept telling myself, man, I'm just an engineer trying to take pictures on the streets.
No, hey, man.
But... Hey, shout out to being an engineer, man.
Yeah.
Shout out. That's my day job. That's what facilitates my creative outlets is... I use, you know, that's the compromises. That's what I do as my day job.
Mm-hmm.
And it facilitates me being able to do these things and do it the way I want to do it.
And everybody's got a story.
Definitely,
And yours holds just as much value as everybody else's. Sure, so tell it to us, man.
Yeah, definitely.
What brought you to this point?
So thanks a lot for having me here. And like when I was listening to Crit's story, I could relate quite a bit, because I was born in India. I grew up there. Until my senior year of undergrad, and like just like his story, I was like, I was very much into Western media and kind of did not really connect that well with like my own culture. And I'll come back to that again, but well, I got to the U.S. at RIT. Shout out to RIT.
RIT, this is a reunion tonight. It's an RIT reunion. Okay.
So I came to RIT as an exchange student. And like back then, I had no idea where Rochester was when I was taking a flight to like to what it seemed was the middle of nowhere. Like, as someone not from the U.S., like, the picture that you're shown is, like, New York City, like, tall buildings, or, like, you know, like, San Francisco, like, L.A., and, like, I stepped foot in Rochester, and it was 2019, and it was the polar vortex, and it's like, the coldest winter we have had for, like, for a really long time.
And
like,
were you coming from a major city or a smaller town in India?
No, I grew up in Delhi, which is like the capital of India, so it's a pretty big city overall.
It's not a Rochester city.
No, not at all. And I was like, wow, this is a... So I did my exchange student. I worked under a professor, and I did research on self-healing plastic. So that's something that... irrelevant to the story, but
we can talk about material science all day. But
I'm a mechanical engineer by trade, material scientist. But so I went back, and I really wanted to do my master's at RIT, and until now, the only photography I had done was being the photographer at family functions as a kid. That's it.
That's how we all start, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and like that was the Kodak story, because like all I knew back then was to take, click a button, and the rest was done by the lab. So yeah. I had no idea what I was doing. But like back there in my conscience, I always wanted to have a creative outlet, and I did not know what it was. I have an older brother who did wildlife photography, and I was kind of inspired by him, but also I did not know if like I had that much like funding to like get a long lens and a good camera to like go out and like do wildlife photography. I don't know if that was my thing. And fast forward, I got my master's, RIT, whatever. I started a job, and that's when I started realizing that, wait a second, we're in Rochester. This Kodak here. Like, I always, like, I love chemistry. So I was like, I've watched a lot of, like, I've consumed a lot of content on film photography in general. Yeah. Let it be magazines, books, or, like, YouTube videos, like, recently. And I was like, maybe let me try shooting film. Yeah. Because let's see how that goes. So a couple of years ago, actually, it's not even been two full years, I bought a camera. It was just some old camera from Facebook Marketplace. That was the first one, and since then it has grown into like quite a collection that that takes more and more space every month. But
hey, I mean, shout out to buying used gear too. Sure. Like, there's completely, it's like when you're trying to get into something, what a great way of learning about what you're doing, either by, you know, borrowing stuff from the college you're at, or borrowing from a friend, or buying used on Marketplace or somewhere else. Like, you don't need to buy new, you don't need to buy the highest end, you need to buy something to try it out and learn what you want to do.
Yeah, that's a philosophy I very much like apply, because like I know a lot of people who get into a hobby and they don't know if it's for them yet.
Yeah.
But they'll buy the most expensive gear that is, because they think that that's what's gonna get them into the hobby, and that's kind of ridiculous. Now that I think of it.
Rich Colon, man, our co-curator, has one of the best quotes. I don't even know if it's his. He might have stole it, but it's, when you eat a good meal, when somebody cooks you a good meal, you don't ask them what kind of stove they cooked it on. Mm. You just enjoy it.
Right? That's true.
Right? And it's a great analogy for like the technology conversation with photography. But a lot of good photographers, I think, have that same journey where they inch into it and they go through an imposter syndrome phase, and you don't really know, but you, for some reason, you just keep going. What do you think kept your exploration going to the point where you are now?
Yeah, I would say, like, initially I was just going out and taking photos, and I got results back, and I was like, I don't know what I'm trying to shoot here. Like, there's a good landscape photo, there's a good photo of like my wife, or there's a good photo of like a couple of friends hanging out. But I was like, what do I like doing? So at that point, I wanted to kind of push myself even more. I was like, I need to keep doing this. And like, then I started developing my own film. And that kind of brought me back to being in a lab, because I loved being inside of a lab and doing lab work. And like, that was it, I think. That's like seeing those pictures for the first time when you pull it out of the tank, and that's kind of kept me going and shooting more pictures every day. And like right now, I would say I've come to like a point where I know what I like. I'm predominantly trying to shoot humans and how they interact with their surroundings. Very zoomed out. I'm not trying to go in and talking to people. What I am trying to portray is like how we humans, that we have changed the earth so much, and I'm trying to picture how we have done it.
Yeah.
So
do you think your mechanical engineering background or your love of chemistry kind of has morphed with your photography work at this point? Is it all one thing? Or do you separate when you leave work and do this?
I mean, I really like mechanical engineering. I used to be an adjunct professor at RIT. I taught courses there, and like I really like engineering and photography. So I think to answer your question, yes, I think they have kind of morphed into like me, like who I am, basically.
Yeah. I think that's a great dichotomy to have, especially because you have a career in that and you're making money. I've seen so many creatives who rely solely on their art to make money, and it really messes with them and their creativity. Definitely, so I gotta believe that it's nice to create without the pressure of I have to make money off of this.
That is true. I mean, I can't really imagine how hard it is to be like an artist in this current like age. It's the technology is a boon, but also like it's a curse at the same time. Like I don't really want to think about it, but maybe, you know, never know.
Well, it's also interesting. Yeah. I love, you know, when you mentioned that you're taking pictures of people interacting with the world. Mm. Like, that's a very engineering mindset, right? To me, like, as somebody who, like, hey, you know, I love understanding how the world works, but the world includes how do people act?
Yeah.
How do they act around other people? How do they act to other people?
Yeah.
And taking that step back and looking at trying to understand, hey, how does all this work? Yeah. How does everybody do that? There's like a few artists out there that have like focused on that. Like a great musician I mentioned a lot just because like it's somebody that always meant a lot to me was like listening to Talking Heads and listening to David Byrne.
Mm-hmm.
The lyrics in there are so much about how he's just trying to understand how people like decide a city to live in.
Yeah.
And how much he would hate living in the country. And it's like this bouncy, beautiful song. He's like, yeah, I don't understand how you people live out here. This is awful. Like, and it's all like very like from the mindset of I don't understand people. I don't understand the world. And having that opportunity to dive into that through photography with an engineering mind is really cool from another engineering mind.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I like that you're able to like see what I'm trying to do here. It's sometimes gets a little bit hard to explain to like people, and because it's not really something that you see often. I mean, there's of course people doing it, but then it's not like in the mainstream media. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say.
And I think photography isn't meant to be explained too much.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the point of taking the photo is it speaks for itself. And I think there could be a bunch of different interpretations of what you do. Mm-hmm. But I think it's all going to feel the same when people look at all of your work really individually. Mm-hmm. Have you come around on Rochester? Do you enjoy being here now?
I do really like being here. I think the only part that I don't like being here is from the month of February to April.
Oh, yeah.
That is, I am not a fan of those.
try Memorial Day.
What's wrong with April?
It's still cold.
Everything. That's my birthday.
It's cold. I was going to say, I knew it by your tone. I knew you were going to say birthday.
I'm just saying April's a little early. I would say February to May.
Wow.
May might not be cutting it.
My mom used to say, and she's from here. It's only two seasons in Rochester, and that's winter and the 4th of July.
Wow.
2 days that's of tough. The summer.
That's all you get.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to take our final break. We're going to come back, get some plugs where people can find their work not in the gallery, get a little tip from anybody who didn't describe it already, and we'll be right back.
Hey, this is Wade Reed with the Level Up Podcast. How do you take your coffee? What's your favorite espresso drink? Do you prefer washed process or natural process coffees? If any of these questions interest you, tune in to the Level Up Podcast presented by Nominate Meals on the Lunchador Podcast Network. We're looking at every link in the coffee supply chain, from growing and processing to cafe life and home coffee brewing, to find the topics that will enrich and maybe even stretch your experience of coffee. So have a listen, check us out on Instagram and Substack, and as always, enjoy your coffee.
All right, back to the Behind the Glass podcast. Again, come out, man, Friday, September 5th, 6 to 8 at the Mercantile on Main. We're going to ask our artists now what they want people to get from their work on Friday, and then just plug where people can find you outside the gallery, social media, website, whatever you want. So let's start with Crit, man.
So for my work on Friday, I mean, big thing I want people to really be able to get out of itself is just feeling connected to art, feeling connected to people, and feeling connected to yourself, knowing that you're able to express whatever you need to express and be able to feel whatever you need to feel. Nice. So again, lots of the art medium format that I shoot, it's all on film. So most of the pictures are 120 format. Very excited for people to see it. My work can be seen at Crate Oopra, that's my social media tag, and then my studio work is at launchcreative.studio.
Awesome. Can't wait to see your work, or for people to see your work. Like I said, I had a little preview, and it's going to be dope.
Thanks for having me.
For sure. All right, Deja, how about you? What do you want people to get from your work on Friday, and where can we find you?
The thing that I want people to get from my work on Friday is perspective is everything, and they could take that how they want to take it, because perspective is literally everything. And I'm glad I get to showcase the perspective through my eye and how I see it. I'm curious to see how other people are going to see it, because it could be taken multiple different ways, the things that are showcased. So I am very curious, but that's the only thing. I just want them to enjoy it through their own perspective.
Yeah. And that's to me, that is the best part about being in the show, is seeing people react to the work and seeing what they get out of it versus what you tried to portray. And sometimes that middle ground can be interesting. So where can people find you? Social, website, you know, plug yourself.
You can find me on Instagram at _ Digital Dash, Facebook, Deja Cologne. Website currently down, under construction, but link will be in bio.
Website? Who needs a website anymore?
Everyone.
Currently down.
Well, thank you. Can't wait for people to experience the work, for sure. And how about you, Swap?
So for tomorrow, I'm trying to showcase my pictures are mostly under the topic of public spaces. I really want people to understand the idea of a third space.
I love the concept.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like a lot of people, all they do is go to work and come back home. I want them to understand there is a third place where you can hang out, meet your friends, family, and everything. It doesn't have to be indoors or anything like that. That's what I want people to kind of take from those images. There may or may not be people in there. Doesn't matter. But the fact is, places like this exist out there for you. People are making them. You just have to be there and interact with, like, what's around you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And how about your socials?
So I'm on Instagram, Swapnil Floyd, and I do have a website, which is also under construction, but you can go there. It's called swaptofilm.com, because okay. I'm a huge proponent of people shooting film. So got I was it. Like, swaptofilm.com. So,
that's clever.
Love the name.
That's very clever.
Thank you. So it is, there's some images there, but it's like all, it's going to be a work in progress until like I decide to like not pay for my domain anymore.
I love the honesty.
Been there.
Yeah, me too, for sure. Well, again, the idea of third spaces is amazing. And, you know, I think this is going to be a great show.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I'm so excited. I think we always get these natural threads somehow.
Yeah.
Without really forcing it too much. And it's always cool how it turns out with every show and how it's curated. So thank y'all for being a part of our experience. And like I said, tomorrow, Friday, September 5th, 6 to 8 Mercantile at Maine. Come through, see the work. First Friday, it should be a vibe, man. Start to fall off, right? And yeah, can't wait to see y'all.
Yeah, and make sure you check out other shows on the Lunchador Podcast Network. Wide variety of shows. We got 15 different shows. Want you to check out some of our newer shows. Check out Nights and Weekends, our music show hosted by Kate Rogers from Bad Bloom. Also, want you to check out Common Thread, which is hosted by our friend Rory Van Grohl from Ugly Duck Coffee and his friend Greg Benoit from the Irondequoit Public Library. They're talking about how hardcore music has affected their lives as performers and as adults with kids. Really fascinating conversation with people from that community. Really interesting. This is what the conversations we want to have on the Lunchador Podcast Network. And we'll be back next time with more Behind the Glass. Uh-oh. Looks like I need to learn how to hit the buttons.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Swap to Film. That's a great name. Yeah.